up? This is Movies On Up, episode 46. Believe the impossible, discover the incredible. That is our tagline for this week. And I know that my co-host Dave does not know what movie this is for. He's going to feverishly search the internet while I'm doing the rest of our introductions. But let me just give Dave and you listeners a little clue. This is a movie starring a gentleman which we will be talking a little bit about in our second episode. That's right. This is our second week of two episodes per week this week. Our discussion episode will be on the very worthy topic of G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra. This guy, not in that movie, but I think it follows a milieu that Dave will talk a bit about, this guy being in sequels to movies that he was not in the first one. And maybe in some cases the sequels being better than the originals, but not in all cases, I think.
He's got a pretty decent track record.
But not enough to say all. At any rate, Believe the Impossible, Discover the Incredible. Now, do you have a decent idea of what that might be?
Oh, I know exactly what
it is. It's on your list, yeah. So, in case you are not sure what it is, all you need to do is listen to our second episode, which will be up later on this week. Listen for Dave's bonus list. And it'll be on there. It'll be one of those five movies. That's our tagline for the week. When you do figure out what it is, what do you do with it? Very simply, you email us your guess, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet directly at Dave. What is Twitter?
@moviesonup.
Yeah, that's it. Or on our Facebook, which is facebook.com/moviesonup. If you guess correctly, and if we pick you, we will send you out a Movies On Up prize package, which does definitely include a button. And now somebody is getting a copy of G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra because I had to buy it, and I don't need it.
Yeah. It was on Netflix Instant
it
forever.
It was, yeah.
And then now we decide to watch it, and it's no longer on Netflix Instant.
No, it isn't. So one of us bought it, watched it, and then gave the voodoo code to the other one.
I got the voodoo code. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, really. So spoiler alert, somebody here is getting a copy of G.I. Joe, courtesy of Movies On Up. That is if you can figure out what the tagline, Believe the Impossible, Discover the Incredible is from, and send that over to us. I believe with the movies that came out this week, we would have thought it would have been impossible if the inappropriate comedy were to take home the box office crown, and maybe incredible if anything other than The Croods did that.
Yeah, I set over under on The Croods for 50, I believe, which you took under. I don't think I ever committed either way.
Probably not.
$44.7 million. So it was. I think my over/under was accurate there. Like, that's close.
You're usually pretty close. I'll give you credit for that.
It was an 11,000 per screen average. Not a bad opening. It's on par with How to Train Your Dragon, which was considered a hit. Olympus Has Fallen, you weren't as optimistic about. You said under. I said it at 25. It, I think, overperformed a little bit, $30.5 million at $9,845 per screen. So, you know, it'll be over halfway towards $70 million budget by the end of the week. Oz finally fell 46%, still brought in $22 million for the third place. The Call, a 49% drop to $8.7 million for fourth. And then Admission, the other wide release, I think I said it about $7 million.
That seems right.
And it was 6.4. So it's right there. It's on a $13 million budget. It didn't do that great, but it's not going to hurt anybody.
Can I tell you why it didn't? I didn't see it. I mean, I should have. That's really got my name all over it. It's Paul Rudd, Tina Fey. But I was reading an article where, I guess it was based off a book. Who knew? Apparently people do that nowadays. That had some sex scenes in it, and Tina Fey had them all cut.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well,
I would have gone to pay the $8.
The trailers don't really set up the story. The trailers make it look just like a traditional romantic comedy where he's the head of a school and
she's an
admissions officer. But no, he's the head of a school where a child goes that he thinks is her son. So there's a lot more to it than that.
And he's a black child.
No, but
I thought he was. Was the kid black?
He might be. I don't know.
I thought he was from the trailer.
The trailers, the TV spot showed nothing about any of that. Six was.
Well, there you go. I'm adding. That's what I bring to the table.
Number six was Spring Breakers.
And your nude scene update on Tina Fey. Sorry, continue.
It went wide. Spring Breakers opened. We talked about it. 23rd best limited opening last week. It went wide with zero publicity. Like it, not publicity, but no marketing behind it. Came in sixth with $5 million. So after 2 weeks, only one in wide, it's at $5.4 million on a $2 million budget without really trying.
Like spring break too, summer break.
Yeah, they're letting word of mouth carry that, and it's doing all right. Silver Linings Playbook finally fell out of the top 10, and its 19th week of release, it's in 11th now. So it finally fell out. For the limiteds, nothing too much. Inappropriate comedy, 275 screens.
$275.
Close. Marketed more than Spring Breakers.
Much more.
$172,000 for $625 per screen.
Good.
Directed by Vince from ShamWow.
Really?
Which I didn't realize that last week.
I did not know that.
It's his second movie he directed. The first one was 1999's The Underground Comedy Movie.
Oh, you know what? That makes sense because I have seen The Underground Comedy Movie.
That's directed by Vince from ShamWow.
Yeah.
Who's also in it as Batman in various roles.
Okay.
So yeah, he directed inappropriate comedy, and this hopefully is enough to never let him direct again. But yeah, that's pretty much it for the box office.
Wow. I got to wrap my head around Vince from ShamWow directing The Underground Comedy Movie.
Yeah. Biting lips off of hookers and directing terrible comedy movies. Oh, wait, did he just punch the hooker after she bit his lip off?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen any ShamWow commercials recently to be able to deduce whether or not he has a lip or it's been replaced by a ShamWow. Either way, Billy Mays would not approve of these sort of things. I guess you could say that situation with Vince and the hooker, that's sort of a mess, right? Well, that's not the only mess we've got to talk about this week. Jane has got a gun and a big old mess. Jane Got a Gun, the movie that Dave talked so glowingly about last week, literally hours after we got off the air, hit a bit of a snag, had a pretty terrible week.
I texted you the headline before you got home, probably.
I think you probably did. A little too late to do anything about it then, but darn it, we will make sure that we discuss it right up front here. It started on the very first day of shooting, or what was supposed to be the first day of shooting, when director Lynn Ramsey left the project by not showing up. She was supposed to have final cut of the film if it was on schedule and on budget. Now, it didn't start on schedule, so she kind of lost that right out of the shoot. And she may have walked when that point couldn't be renegotiated. Warrior director Gavin O'Connor quickly stepped in to replace her. Then Jude Law, who stepped into the cast last week after Michael Fassbender had to leave, exited stage left along with Ramsey, since he signed on to work specifically with her. Producers are currently hoping to land Jake Gyllenhaal, Tobey Maguire, or Jeff Bridges to step into the vacant villain role.
This is a mess. Like, I was so... Just last week, I talked about how excited I was for this movie, and I don't like Westerns, but the cast was awesome. I'm interested to see what she would do with it. And there's so many rumors around here. There's talk that maybe she left the weekend before, and the studio is just claiming she's a no-show to... It's so weird.
And that Michael Fassbender maybe left because he didn't get along with her, not so much.
Yeah,
because
the same
X-Men
producer
thing.
Is supposed to fund her next film. That's probably not going to happen. There's some marriage stuff in there where somebody's sister is married to somebody. It's a mess. Like, it's an awkward Thanksgiving dinner waiting to happen. It just sucks because I was so excited for this movie.
I'd like to see Jeff Bridges in the villain role. That would be pretty
and
sweet.
And that'll shape it, because Jake Gyllenhaal, he's filming something in Atlanta that's almost done. So if they can get him, he can step right in. Jeff Bridges, they might have to wait a little bit, but they can film a lot without him. And that takes, they're up for the same part. At this point, they just want to get somebody. And it's a villain role, so I could see Jeff Bridges in there.
Heck yeah.
As a Western villain,
yeah.
That's what he's built for. I see him better than Gyllenhaal or Tobey Maguire. So, I mean, of all of them, I'd like to see Bridges in there, but...
Is Christoph Waltz unavailable? It's a villain role. I mean, can't we just... Doesn't he have like a red villain hotline he can just pick up?
But Ramsey's yet to say a word about it. The studio, it finally calmed down. The last bit of news came out about Thursday or Friday, so they kind of took the weekend off. But it was like every day last week something was happening, and it's just... I still want to see it. And Natalie Portman's on as a producer, so she's not only starring, she's a producer. I think it'll end up okay. I think it'll still do well. I think it'll still come out a good movie. I like Gavin O'Connor did well enough with Warrior.
Yeah. And he's reunited
with Edgerton.
Yeah, yeah. So. And I heard that was a bit of a problem too, as far as funding went. When Fassbender left the project, they didn't want to give as much money because Edgerton wasn't as big of a movie star as Mikey Fassbender, which I think is kind of what we had talked a little bit about when they made that casting switch anyway, but... Whatever. If they bring the dude on, that'll be fine.
But there's so many it's too far along now to scrap.
Oh yeah,
they've put so much into it,
and they're getting ready to start shooting.
And the fact that a director came in so quickly helps, but you got to have that. And I mean, I'm sure they can film without that villain just yet, but.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but this villain, was that, that's a former, okay, no, oh, she goes to the former
boyfriend. She has a husband.
Yeah, okay.
The husband pisses off, makes angry.
No, I think that's okay.
I'm trying not to swear. The husband makes the villain angry, which was Edgerton, then Jude Law, now one of these three.
Sure.
They beat him pretty much to a pulp, leave him dead, and then hunt down his home. Where Natalie Portman lives. So she gets her ex-lover to help protect the home.
Now that is an awkward Thanksgiving conversation.
Yes, now that's now Edgerton was Fassbender. So she,
Natalie Portman gets around is what you're saying.
Yeah, she gets an ex to save her and her husband.
I'm sure that goes over well.
Yeah.
About as well as our next story. The Chinese fire drill continues to drive the Equalizer. Antoine Fuqua is the latest director to sign on to the Denzel Washington 80s TV adaptation. He replaces Rupert Wyatt, who replaced Nikki Winding Refn, who replaced Paul Haggis.
And the thing is Haggis was on this for a couple years. He dropped off shortly before they got Denzel Washington. This was only a few months ago that Nikki Winding Refn jumped in. Then Rupert Wyatt jumped in 3 weeks ago. Now he's out. Now Antoine Fuqua was in. I wonder how long this will last, because he's coming off White House Down, which was his biggest opening ever. And they want to make the movie for, well, I think it's $70 million budget. It's $50 million
Denzel
budget.
Denzel gets his full cut.
But Denzel's getting his full 20.
Yeah.
So you have the success of Training Day with them two together. Now you have him coming off a $30 million opening. If he wants more money,
he might be able to get it.
Do you give it to him? So if he doesn't get it, I could see this continuing. But it just, I'm still interested in it. I like Denzel in that kind of role.
I was into it in the Nikki Winding Refn phase, but now I think I have decided that my interest in this project has come to its end. This is not the end of Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg's directing career. The pair, whose directorial debut isn't due until next summer, have signed on to direct The Interview based on their own script. Rogen will star as a TV producer who gets entangled in a plot to assassinate the leader of North Korea, along with his handsome talk show host, most likely played by James Franco.
I'm excited for this. I love Seth Rogen has one of those careers that I'm incredibly envious of. Like, you know, he starts off with small parts, does well enough as an actor to where he could start writing scripts, has a few hits, takes enough jobs that maybe aren't top notch for them, then builds himself into leading man. Now he's directing a movie. I'm just glad that Green Hornet didn't kill all this. Like, when something like that happens, that was his baby, that was his passion project, and it'd do that well. So I'm glad that didn't kill. I mean, he didn't direct it, but he wrote, starred, produced.
A bad movie.
Yeah. So it seems like it might be, I don't know. I loved Pineapple Express. And you can tell Franco and Seth Rogen have that chemistry that is just awesome. And I'd watch them in anything.
I think that's kind of the thing is, like, I think a lot of those guys, like Rogen, and I'll lump Jason Segel into that same category, like, they just seem like likable dudes.
Yeah.
And the projects that they pick, I mean, Dave and I are dudes. We seem to like them. I think they really like have a good idea of who they're writing for.
Because you know what? I didn't hate Green Hornet. I enjoyed parts of it. Like, I really, there was some stuff it could do without, but overall, I liked it. But,
and maybe that's just, you know, you try and you like the guy, so you want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Like, I can't think of anything Seth Rogen's done that I hate. I mean, writing wise, Drillbit Taylor was garbage. But I feel like that was just kind of something to
get. We'll blame that on Owen Wilson because we don't like him.
Well, no, I think that was something him and Goldberg. I think that's the kind of script you have to write to get more chances.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can look at, like, Herbie Fully Loaded. You know, they didn't write that, but Thomas Lennon did.
But, I mean, they made a career off of those.
Well, yeah,
but now they have Hellbaby.
That's what I'm
saying.
Out. Right.
Grant's directing Baywatch. So, I mean, they've, you got to do some stuff that you're not going to look back on.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't hit a home run every time. You do have to eat. But for the most part, yeah.
But as far as movies Seth Rogen's been in, even ones that he's only in, I don't think I've disliked any of them.
No, I mean, I can't think of any
off the top of my head.
No. And I'm not willing to try and go find one that I don't like, because that would be contrary to our point that Dave really like Seth Rogen, and he's envious the fact that he was a writer and has now made the jump to director. Dave's favorite screenwriter is now ready to make his directorial debut. Alex Garland, who wrote 28 Days Later and Sunshine, will step into the director's role for Ex Machina. He also wrote the script, of course, which centers on a young dude picked to spend a week with an artificially intelligent robot lady. It will shoot later this year, hoping for a 2014 release.
I love Alex Garland. 28 Days Later and Sunshine are two of my favorite movies ever. He also wrote Never Let Me Go, which was a great book. I thought the adaptation of it was, he did well with it. Like, it was really good. He wrote last year's Dread. And it says to make directorial debut. There's rumors that the director for Dread was fired early on and that Garland just directed the rest of it, but he kept his directing credit. But I think it'll be exciting. Like, I like him as a writer a lot. He wrote a novel years ago. I wrote a couple.
Cause I don't read books.
The Beach was based on his novel, and he wrote another one that he made the movie
of. Was that that Leo
movie? DiCaprio movie. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And he wrote one, I forget the name of it, that Jonathan Rhys-Meyers starred in. But I'm excited for it. I like him. He does characters very, very well. And this one, it's just a billionaire paying a young guy to spend a week with his robot. So
it's like Robot and Frank, but if it, instead of stealing things, it was like sexy time.
I don't know.
Because I'm guessing.
The only thing about
maybe I'm just projecting into the story, what would I do with an intelligent robot lady other than have like intelligent conversations about books that I don't read?
The only thing
I'd get into the sexy time
is there's somebody else with Lady Robot movie coming out, and I forget exactly who. So I mean,
it's that Natalie Portman movie because she's a robot. That's basically what I'm getting at.
Yeah, but
she's a lady robot.
Timing wise, might come with that, but I'll be excited for this regardless.
Do we know how long that that guy has to spend with the robot lady for sexy time?
A week.
A week? It's not a couple years.
That's worse than mine.
No, it isn't. It's really better. And audience, you're just going to have to take my word for it. The transition I was going to make is if I had to spend a couple years with a sexy time, intelligent robot lady, because that is important, ladies, you have to be intelligent, they would be a couple wonderful years. Fred Savage to make his feature directorial debut with Ladies' Night. Charlize Theron will star as a lady having one last night of fun with her friends before uprooting her life and starting over. David Caspi of Happy Endings wrote the script.
Everything makes sense about this. Fred Savage has done a lot of TV, so him making a feature debut by one of the Happy Endings writers makes a lot of sense. Charlize Theron is what makes it interesting to me because she's a big-time movie star, so it's not just your run-of-the-mill comedy. And she's doing another comedy. Like, she's got The Million Ways to Die in the West coming out, and then this. So she's going to be doing, like, back-to-back comedies. So I'm excited for it. I think it'll be cool. The premise doesn't sound very good, but I like Charlize Theron, and I generally like the choices she makes.
Fred Savage apparently has a really good sense of humor. Some of the things that, I mean, he's directed episodes of Modern Family, which were funny,
Party Down.
Yeah, and both of those things I really like. So I think his involvement leads me to believe that this is going to be funny. We've talked before about how Charlize Theron really kind of does have a careful eye on what she picks to do. Maybe they're not always the best movies, but I mean, there's got to at least be something there for all these people to get involved. So, I mean, I think we've got reason to be optimistic.
He directed pretty much every episode of Best Friends Forever, which was a sitcom last summer on NBC that only lasted 6 episodes that I loved. But so, I mean, he does good. Just looking at his TV, like he's on a lot of, like he's done episodes of a lot of good shows. So, And now a movie.
Puff the Magic reboot. Disney is rebooting the 70s live action / animated hybrid Pete's Dragon / drug-induced trip, I guess. The updated version will not be a musical and will reinvent the core story that was originally about a boy fleeing his adoptive family with his pet dragon. David Lowry has been hired to write the script. Lowry, who co-wrote the indie festival darling Pit Stop, wrote and directed the 60s western Ain't Them Bodies Saints, and edited Shane Carruth's Upstream Color in the past year. Kind of an interesting fit for this project.
Like, I mean, he got Pit Stop, which is just this really gritty, like, indie, and then he directed Ain't Them Bodies Saints, which is like a 60s set western, which is getting amazing reviews, and then he edited Upstream Color, which is probably going to be one of the most insane movies you'll see this year. That's such a weird choice for a Disney movie. But
that was a weird Disney movie.
Yeah, and I like that they're, you know, thinking outside the box and going with him. So I'm I wouldn't be interested in this story otherwise, but I'm kind of interested to see what this guy does with it.
Yeah, I mean, Pete's Dragon was one of those. I saw it like maybe once when I was a kid, and I thought, boy, this is kind of messed up. I mean, it wasn't on the level of like H.R. Puff and stuff messed up, but yeah, it just seemed a little hippie-ish for like.
I mean,
a
he was running away from his abusive adoptive family
with his pet dragon.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I think they're gonna try to make it a little more family friendly this time around.
I guess, but I mean, whenever they say, oh, we're going to reinvent the core, I'm thinking they're going to make a dark version. And I'm like, well, how does
this
it
like
get
an ungritty
darker?
Reboot.
Yeah, they're reverse Nolaning it, which could be some sort of sexy time position, the reverse Nolan. I don't know. The cast is coming out of their shells for the upcoming reboot of Teenage Mutant. Can reverse, we call it? We can't call it.
Reverse Nolaning, though, is when you're doing something that seems really complicated, but you're explaining it along the way.
Just so everybody knows. You're drawing pictures. Can we even call the Turtles movie? Because they're not turtles. They're not.
They're turtles.
Are they? I thought they were
just
aliens.
They're just not mutants. They're alien turtles.
So we'll call this the Michael Bay Alien Turtles movie. Fair enough?
They're apparently ninjas still.
All right. At any rate. Last week, Alan Richardson from Blue Mountain State and Hunger Games 2 became the first turtle cast, nabbing the role of Raphael. This week, hold your breath, folks. Pete Plaszek, Jeremy Howard, and Noel Fisher have rounded out the foursome as Leonardo, Donatello, and Michelangelo, respectively. The actors won't be in suits like the original movies, but will be doing the action for motion capture. The Shredder is the next to be cast for the June 2014 release.
So they didn't go for big names.
No.
You know, I've seen Richson in stuff. I've seen episodes of Blue Mountain State. He commits. He does well for what he does. Raphael's completely different. Hunger Games has been dead on with casting, so I don't doubt that this kid has talent. The others, the ones worked with Liebson before in Battle Los Angeles.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Good start.
They really don't have. A couple of these guys have been on a few episodes of Shameless. There's really not a lot of acting credits with them, which I'm not against. I didn't need big stars for it. I don't know enough about them. I don't know if they're trained and they can do the
trained in the art of ninjutsu.
Yeah, and I mean it's gonna be motion capture. Which are they just gonna?
Why couldn't they just motion capture Ray Park or somebody that is awesome?
And yeah, so I mean with Richson it was like, okay,
Ray Park will be the Shredder.
He's a physical guy. Like Richson's physical, he's in shape. It's like, okay, I don't doubt him, he can do it. But the other two guys don't look physical at all. I don't know. I mean, I hate this movie already. It has nothing to do with this cast.
Not this cast.
Yeah, it has mostly Megan Fox casting is terrible. Yeah. The producer is terrible. The director is terrible.
The idea is
terrible.
I
wish that in a perfect world. I am excited about any casting news to come out of this, but I don't care.
For more Ray Park talk, stay tuned. It's coming. Not this episode, the next one.
Yeah.
Oldman and Hardy back together again. Gary Oldman joins Hardy and Nomi Rapace in Child 44.
Oldman and Hardy had like a 3 or 4 movie span with Lawless, Dark Knight Rises, Tinker Sailor Soldier Spy. There was like a year that they were just filming together.
There was a year where their movies were together, but I mean they had to be filming together for probably even longer than that, you'd think, right?
Eh, but this one sounds awesome.
Maybe they're roomies.
This it seems intense. Like it's based on a book where it's like a perfect world, and then Tom Hardy thinks somebody had murdered somebody, but you can't accuse anybody of murder in this like dystopian society because everything's too perfect. So
it's like the inverse of Minority. It's a reverse Minority Report.
I think it'll be awesome. I love the cast. Noomi Rapace, I'm loving everything she's doing.
Yeah, you know her and Tom Hardy both do seem to do projects that are intense. To say the least.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They're also, Hardy and Noomi Rapace are working on that Animal Rescue together, too.
That's the one that's being produced by...
Different one.
Oh, okay.
He's producing another one.
I don't know. We talked about it. I just got confused because that happens.
There
to
were
me.
Some new, if you Google Tom Hardy puppy, there were some new images added this week.
I think you made me do that once.
Yeah, because it's adorable.
Yeah, it's absolutely adorable.
If you Google Tom Hardy, Gary Oldman image search, there's some adorable ones of them like hugging and Tom Hardy kissing him on the cheek.
Is there, if you Google Gary Oldman, Tom Hardy, and puppies?
I haven't tried it yet.
Well, go ahead while I read our next story. There's nothing unnatural about Googling Gary Oldman, Tom Hardy, and puppies, but this seems unnatural. Robert Redford joins the Marvel Universe as he signs on to play a senior S.H.I.E.L.D. agent in Captain America 2. His contract, like all Marvel contracts, will also include future roles within the universe, like Max Hernandez's contract, who will also be appearing in Cap 2. He'll be reprising his role as Agent Sitwell.
No, just pictures of Tom Hardy and Gary Oldman and pictures of Tom Hardy and puppies. So no mixture.
Somebody needs to get on that.
What's weird about this is Robert Redford for 20 years now has been doing only stuff he only wants to do. Like, he's been writing, directing stuff. He hasn't really done anything that he isn't directing or at least producing. So for him to come in and sign on to this and sign the typical Marvel contract to where you're contracted for like 7 other movies, it's cool. I mean, he's
maybe
good.
He's got like grandkids that like
probably that kind of thing where it's like, screw it, he can take any role he wants. Yeah. In Hollywood, if Robert Redford wants a role, he can have it pretty much. So to have him come in there, I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm sure his, you know, he might be in 7 movies, but you know, in all of the 7 movies, he might actually have to work for 21 days.
Yeah,
you know,
he might have 20 minutes of screen time. Yeah. Between all of them, but
it's good work if you can get it, I guess. Dave Franco and McLovin are heading to Townies. Franco and Christopher Mintz-Pass join the Seth Rogen, Zac Efron, Rose Byrne comedy directed by Nicholas Stoller.
This is another one that I think sounds funny.
Yes.
Zac Efron is like a frat dude, and Seth Rogen lives next to the frat house, and it's just them battling. Dave Franco is the Zac Efron's like right-hand man, which... he's a perfect douche.
I kind of like Dave Franco. I really do.
I love Dave Franco. He is such a perfect douche. Like,
yeah.
Look at him in 21 Jump Street. Street. He was perfect.
He was kind of a douche in Warm Bodies, too.
Was he?
Yeah.
He's so good at it. And McLovin, I'm assuming, is going to be either Rogan's friend or another brother. But I think it'll be funny.
Yeah. It's really easy to bash Zac Efron, but I mean, I know
I don't. If you watch 17 again, I realize that sentence sounds silly, but for what that movie is, Zac Efron is really good in it. For that kind of role, to where he's essentially playing Matthew Perry in Zac Efron's body, he delivers, and he's really funny. And I've said for a long time, I think Zac Efron is just a couple roles away from taking that Channing Tatum switch, because Channing Tatum just seemed like this heartthrob that guys weren't really into. And then 21 Jump Street seemed to turn the corner for him to where now like dudes want to be him. I think Efron is ready to take that turn because I do think he's talented. I think he needs to get away from the Nicholas Sparks movies and the Catch with His Dead Brother movies. But I think this might be the start to that.
It could be, or, you know, if you were an adult listener that doesn't want to watch 17 again, you hated The Paperboy, but I don't think it was that bad. And I think that, I think he did pretty well in that. That was kind of a heavy, heavy flick. And I mean, he really did kind of have to carry the movie. And, you know, you can argue that it wasn't very good and maybe, I don't know. I think he did well in that. I do like Nicholas Stoller. I think he's great to be directing this cast. I think all his movies have ended up really funny, so yeah. I am looking forward to this one. Also looking forward to the Vacation reboot sequel, as Christina Applegate goes on vacation with Ed Helms. She will play Mrs. Rusty Griswold.
Perfect casting.
Yeah.
I think Ed Helms is perfect casting. I think Christina Applegate's perfect casting.
Yep.
I do have my worries, though. Like, I've spoke up about this movie, but it's written by John Francis Daley and his writing partner. I didn't like Horrible Bosses. I've heard some terrible things about Burt Wonderstone.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much has changed from them writing to getting it into the director's hands. So I don't know. Maybe this story will fit better for him. But I'll keep an open mind about it until at least a trailer.
I want it to be good.
The casting is perfect.
Yeah.
Casting is absolutely perfect.
Melissa McCarthy's Tammy is getting some company. Mark Duplass and Susan Sarandon have joined Tammy. That is the road trip comedy written and directed by McCarthy and her husband, Ben Falcone. The story centers on McCarthy's character, who quits her fast food job after finding out her husband is cheating on her and hits the road with her grandma to go find herself at Mount Rushmore.
That's another one I'm excited about. Melissa McCarthy's at a point now where if it's not Identity Thief, I'm excited about it.
I mean, and you add in Mark Duplass, and then you get really excited.
Mark Duplass, yeah. I'm excited if he's in Identity Thief. Like, that's how into Mark Duplass I am. So I think it'll be cool. I think it'll be cool to see her branch out. She's another one, like Seth Rogen, like, starts doing the small roles, kills it, gets an Oscar nomination, has a sitcom, has a few hits under her belt. Now she's directing something, so...
I guess can't fault you for liking the lady. She is awfully funny. There's no fault in Shailene Woodley's star rising. After recently landing the lead in the upcoming teen/young adult adaptation Divergent, Ms. Woodley signs on to another leading role in The Fault in Our Stars. It's based on John Green's bestseller about two youths who meet in a cancer support group and decide to make the most of what they have left.
I was kind of disappointed when she took Divergent because I think... those books look terrible. I haven't read them, but I know enough about them to know that they look terrible.
You have eyes.
Yeah. Okay. So
that's all you need.
I didn't want her to go down that path to where it's just those are the kind of roles she's going to take. But this book is fantastic. This book is really, really good, and I could see her nailing it. Like, there's substance there. There's a lot for. She did good with what she was given in The Descendants. This is like if you magnify that by 10, and I'm really excited. I think this is what's going to make people look at her and think like, oh, holy crap. Like,
this movie is set up perfectly to really give her a huge launch. I don't think I'm going to see it. It sounds way too heavy.
It's good. The book is fantastic. Yeah. But I mean, just her... she should have gotten an Oscar nom for The Descendants. I think she was good enough for that.
She'll get one for this.
It's possible.
Has to, right?
It's possible, but it depends on how it comes out.
Wow.
But I mean, she's got The Amazing Spider-Man coming out, which the third one she'll have a bigger role. Divergent.
Spoiler alert.
It could be good. I doubt it, but it could be big. It could be a hit. And then something like this to balance it out. So
apparently the world will end 2 months early. Edgar writes, the world's end has been bumped up from October to August 23rd.
Awesome. I have to wait 2 months less for this movie.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. That's really the only reason to tell you, is because it's good news.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
How excited are you about our trailers, about all of these here?
About half of them I'm into.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. The first one... I mean, I was into the fact that there was a trailer for it because I thought, oh, that'll be great. It'll be a chance for me to get reacquainted with Starbuck. But as it turns out, Katie Sackhoff is not at all in the teaser trailer for Riddick. It's Vin Diesel and some monsters. No Carl Urban, no Katie Sackhoff, nobody else except Vin.
I haven't seen any of them. What was it, just Pitch Black and then Chronicles of Riddick?
As far as I know, yeah.
Then there's an animated one, but...
oh, yeah, that's true. I don't care.
I thought Pitch Black was just like a disposable monster movie. Wasn't it built like that?
Yeah, kind of.
And then all of a sudden, Vin Diesel was like... it's like, the next thing, like, we care about Riddick? Like, wait, what? So
Riddick was just... Riddick was like Boba Fett. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, oh, that guy's kind of cool.
Okay.
And then let's spin him off.
Because I haven't seen either one of them. Nothing about this makes me want to see it.
No, I don't care.
There's some terrible lines, typical Vin Diesel lines in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll pass.
Yeah, I'm fine. You've already passed twice.
I'm fine being in the dark about this franchise.
Waka,
bam!
Waka.
Nailed it.
Do you want to just, because I mean, you kind of set up the next one. Why don't you just keep it going?
Oh, I wasn't meaning to.
Well, you did.
Star Trek Into Darkness released a new international trailer.
Oh, that was well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you just
went
right from...
into it.
No, I'm just saying you went from, I could stay in the dark about this, and then, like, right there it is in the title.
Yeah.
So, way to go.
I was excited. I've loved the other trailers for Star Trek Into Darkness.
This one, I think, is better, because it actually... It's amazing. You know Benedict Cumberbatch is the bad guy, but you don't know, like, why is he a bad guy?
I've been thinking, with as little as I've known, just as much as I know about Abrams and Star Trek in general and Cumberbatch... I've been saying, like, this Cumberbatch is going to destroy this movie. I think he's going to kill. I think it's going to be one of those where it's like, oh my God, that guy is awesome. This trailer knocks everything home.
Do you think he's going to have his Riddick moment?
I think he's gonna go. I think he's gonna create one of like a villain that's gonna go down forever, where people are gonna. I think he's gonna be one of the best on-screen villains. I really do.
I mean, not in Star Trek, but you think like on-screen villains
yes,
of all time?
Because I think he's gonna be. I mean, this trailer it has a feel like the first Iron Man 3 trailer, where it was basically just 3 minutes of Iron Man getting his ass kicked. This is basically just everybody on the Enterprise or the Starfleet, whatever they're called, getting defeated by Benedict Cumberbatch.
By one dude.
Yeah, I mean, it looks awesome.
It looks like Bourne Ultimatum in space.
Yeah,
because he's just like a pretty much a one man wrecking crew.
He's just so good. I think he's. I honestly think he's going to be one of the best screen villains ever.
Could be.
I really do. And this trailer, it gives me goosebumps watching it. Because
it does look like a cool trailer.
It looks amazing. Yeah.
And I like the fact that there's some stuff from Earth.
And I'm not a Star Trek dude. I don't care about Star Trek. I don't like any of that. I don't care about it. I liked the first. I liked Abrams' first movie.
I think that's the thing that Abrams brings to the franchise is kind of acceptability from people that aren't Trekkies, which I am not. But, you know, hey, I thought the first one was okay. I think my eyes hurt after watching it.
I'm excited for it.
I think looking at the trailer for our next movie, that hurts my eyes. It is Trance. It's by, you mentioned your favorite screenwriter, the director of those films, Danny Boyle. This is kind of like a heist movie, but done in a very Danny Boyle style.
It's weird. I don't even know how to explain the plot, but it looks good. James McAvoy, who I'm not
who
into,
you hate.
I'm growing. He's growing on me because between this and Welcome to the Punch, I think I'll have to take a Channing Tatum style turn on him where I'll have to like him. But I think it looks okay. I mean, it's Boyle.
I think it looks cool.
I think I'll watch anything Danny Boyle does, but I'll take something like this over Slumdog or 127 Hours any day of the week because his, and I mean, even the trailer, you can tell it's kind
stylistic,
of movie because it doesn't say from the Academy Award winning or nominated director of
Slumdog
Millionaire in 127
Hours. No, it's 28 Days Later.
And Trainspotting.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, you know what audience you're going for.
Yeah, these are the ones I like.
He's not trying to add another nomination to his list on this. He's going back to just making a cool action movie, which, okay.
Yeah, I'll sign on for it. I would say that those are probably the ones that I think are good.
Those two?
Well, I don't mind some of the ones at the end, but this kind of starts a stretch where I didn't really care for him too much. Starting off with Hummingbird, didn't really care too much.
The first minute of the Hummingbird trailer, it's the new Jason Statham movie. It just looks like a Jason Statham movie.
Sure.
Like, it just looks like him kicking people and stuff. But as the trailer progresses, it looks like the kind of movie I've been wanting Jason Statham to make forever. Because it looks like it's a mixture of the stuff he used to do, where it's character-driven.
The Guy Ritchie movies.
Yeah, and what he became famous for is the kicking people.
The Guy Ritchie movies.
Eh. So, I think this looks like something. It looks like something like what he always does, with just a little bit more added to it. And that's what I want. I don't hate his just kick people movies, but I know he's better than that. And I think he's a really good actor when he's given material. And it looks like he has something to work with in this one.
I think those are all accurate. But I don't mind when he's just kicking people in the face. That's fine with me. So maybe I'm just broke up about his diversification. I think I was broken up about the trailer for Epic because the cast is so epic. That is most of the trailer is like, hey, guess who's in this movie? It's Beyonce. Guess who's in this movie? It's Steven Tyler. Guess who's in this movie? Like, you get really, really tired of that. I think we could probably spend the rest of our podcast just literally listing the cast of this movie.
And it's, what is it, Fox Anime? Yeah, it's from the Ice Age and Rio. So, I mean, it's not DreamWorks or it's not Pixar, where you can kind of tell a difference because DreamWorks does it a little bit, but not as much. Pixar How often do they even promote their cast?
Yeah.
Like, they don't really, like the Monsters University trailers, you don't really see Billy Crystal or John Goodman's names.
Right.
Like, you don't, the Despicable Me 2 trailer, you didn't see, I think Steve Carell's name is in there, but you don't see the other cast. Like, with animation, if you make the movies good, it doesn't matter who's voicing them, because I'm not gonna
the kids don't care.
I'm not gonna go take my kids to see it just because Beyonce's doing a voice.
Right.
I truly don't care who the voices are. Like, I enjoyed Megamind. Yeah, Will Ferrell, Jonah Hill, Brad Pitt, Tina Fey did good. If you do the same movie with different voices that still perform, fine. There's a million voice actors out there that could do just as good a job. They just don't have the name recognition. But I don't care. And the way I look at it is when you're trying to sell an animated movie based solely on the cast, I have zero interest because that just to me looks like it's not good. You're not trying to sell me on the movie. You're trying to sell me on who does voices in it. And every trailer for this has been terrible. The first trailer, it was just a teaser. It was awful. And they haven't gotten any better.
No.
And when a minute and 30 of your 3-minute trailer is just listing off people that
Do you like this person? Do you like this person? Do you like this person?
Doesn't make me want
to see it. No, not at all. I don't want to see our next movie either, but it took kind of a divergent animation trailer path where instead of listing all the people that are in it, I don't believe they list any of the voice talent at all for Turbo.
No, and it's Ryan Reynolds. Like, Ryan Reynolds is the main one. It's just, it doesn't look good.
No.
It's about a snail that gets the power to go really fast.
In a kind of a convoluted way.
Very convoluted. It's convoluted in the trailer.
Yeah.
Like, so what? But the only thing interesting about this movie is this and RIPD, I was just setting up, I was preparing our summer preview. This and RIPD, the other Ryan Reynolds movie this summer, come out within 2 days of each other.
Well, I guess
you're not selling Ryan Reynolds, you're trying to sell your movie.
And those are different audiences.
Yeah.
So, I don't think there'll be one will steal from
but
the
other. But it doesn't look good.
No, not at all. That was the second trailer for Turbo. We've talked about a couple trailers for World War Z, the Brad Pitt joint. And the thing that, the more I watch these trailers, the only thing I can seem to take away from them is that the zombies in this movie are like a barrel full of monkeys. You know, that game with the monkeys with the hook arms and you make a monkey tower. That's what these zombies are like. And if you're listening to me, World War Z producers, you should get on that merchandising because I would buy a barrel full of zombies.
The zombies look terrible. The CGI looks terrible. Awful. Everything else about this movie looks good. It looks like this trailer really ramped up the intensity. Like, I think the scene, like on the plane, like, okay, that's intense. I think there are scenes in there that I think it's going to be an intense movie. I just feel like the zombies are going to bring it down.
Yeah, I don't think I care. This,
plus, I wish there was a movie based on the book, World War Z.
That's what I was going to say. Like, that's a book that I have read, and I really enjoyed it. And I can't see them making a good movie adaptation.
Three trailers in, and I still don't see anything from the book other than the title. I mean,
they're trying to find out the zero patient kind of.
And
I guess
it's good. I get the feeling that he's going to be going to multiple locations, which, okay, that you'll get from the book,
right.
But it could have just done how the book, it could have, I don't know.
It's probably just not going to be good. We can leave it at that. Fair enough.
I'll still see it.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to run out and see it. I don't, yeah, I got nothing against him. I like,
the CGI looks terrible though.
What's her name? Mariel Enos. Yeah, her, Brad Pitt's wife. She's all right. We're a small woman. Anyway, you mentioned not really being able to necessarily tell what's going on. I would say this next trailer, I was interested in looking at the trailer, but you get no idea of what the movie's about. It's called The Kings of Summer, and it's got some people that you might recognize, Alison Brie and Nick Offerman. You won't see any of them in the trailer. It's just three kids banging on a pipe.
This trailer is terrible. I'm interested in this movie. I've read enough about it. It's had positive screenings.
It's Sundance?
It used to be called Toys House or Toys Attic something. It used to be called
Toys in the Attic.
Toys House. It used to be called Toys House. It's got a good cast. The quotes in the trailer make me really interested in it. But the trailer does nothing.
No, it's like it's like Stomp. The trash cans, that play, or musical, whatever you want to call that, done by the cast of Stand By Me.
Because, I mean, it's got Alison Brie, Nick Offerman, Marilyn Rice Cubb, Megan Mullally, Kumail Nanjiani, like...
Funny folks.
Hannibal Buress, all these people I love. I don't doubt that the movie's fun. I think it might have been filmed in Cleveland. I think listener Tyler might actually be an extra in this movie.
If that's true, let us know.
I could be pulling that out of somewhere, but I don't know. but
out of that pipe that they were banging.
Yeah, on. But then on the flip side is maybe it's better that this is the trailer because I'll still see it. Maybe this isn't giving away any jokes.
Yeah.
Whereas like it drew Superbad comparisons, which Superbad had an. had enough jokes.
I'm going to stomp you if you don't quit it with that bag.
Superbad had enough jokes that not all the good ones were shown in the trailer. Some of them lost impact because you'd seen them already. But if you go into a movie and it and you haven't seen any of the jokes...
They're all going to be funny,
but it, I just think it's a terrible trailer.
Yeah, the pipe stomping will lose its impact when we go to see the movie. I think you know what you're going to get with White House Down and the Wolverine, those... trailers will be out this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, respectively. So if you happen to take a look at those this week, you want to let us know your thoughts, please do so. moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet your thoughts at Dave at moviesonup or leave a post on our Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/moviesonup.
That's weird timing for the White House Down trailer, I think.
Coming directly off the heels of Olympus Has Fallen. Yeah. Maybe that's why. I was like, hey, you like this? Check this. We'll see you in a couple months. Not so weird timing for what's coming out this week. G.I. Joe Retaliation hits theaters on Thursday, hence our G.I. Joe themed episode, which Dave and I will be recording here momentarily. Also out this week, The Host, Tyler Perry's new movie, whatever that is, because that's,
it's like
we're a legitimate movie podcast.
The title of it is like Tyler Perry's Temptation, Confessions of a Marriage Counselor. Yeah, Tyler Perry's Temptation, Confessions of a Marriage Counselor.
Okay, that's what that movie's called.
That much of a title?
I don't know. I mean, we in limited release, The Place Beyond the Pines. Welcome to the Punch. That was that movie that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah,
with McAvoy that you are
McAvoy
going to love.
And Mark Strong, I'm going to love. Place Beyond the Pines is Bradley Cooper, Ryan Gosling that I'm going to love.
Yeah,
like I'm really into.
It's a lot of handsome man in that movie.
I'm really into both of those movies. I don't get.
You won't be able to see either.
I don't get why they're limited.
Really limited.
Bradley Cooper
and Gosling.
Gosling should be able to be big.
Do you think so?
The Host is weird because that's that Stephanie Meyer novel.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to be being promoted like you would expect.
Maybe no, not like you'd expect from the lady that did Twilight. But they will tell you in the TV spots I've seen. Hey, if you like Twilight, you're going to love this.
And this is where I felt...
Maybe because they already know that people don't.
And this is where I felt like Shailene Woodley taking Divergent. Saoirse Ronan is the star of this. And I think she's super talented. I don't want her to be in... I don't want her to pigeon herself into roles like this.
Dakota Fanning was in the Twilights, yeah.
Yeah, but...
She's talented, but she needs to put herself through college.
Yeah, I think Saoirse Ronan is very good. And I think she's gonna give her damnedest in this movie. I just don't
think
it'll
be good.
This won't
be any good.
G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Kind of looks good.
It looks fun.
Or watchable.
It looks dumb, fun. Like, it doesn't look as intense as Olympus Has Fallen, which just opened really well. It looks like just a dumb, fun action movie. It looks kind of like what people wanted Die Hard 5 to be.
Yeah, maybe a lighter version of that.
Or it looks kind of like what people
wanted
G.I.
Joe to
be. So,
spoiler alert, it wasn't.
40 for G.I. Joe.
I'll take over.
This is weird because it opens on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. So but you're only going to count Friday, Saturday,
we'll
Sunday.
We'll figure it out. No, Thursday through Sunday.
Okay, I'll still take over.
40? 40 I think is low. The Host, 15.
I'll take over on that too.
And then Tyler Perry, 15.
I'm going to take the over on Tyler Perry. Sorry.
So you think G.I.
Joe... I think over on all of them.
That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. That is a lot of money.
Because the cruise is probably going
to hold... That's $80 million at least.
Because the cruise is going to hold pretty well.
Or 70, I think.
Olympus Has Fallen, who knows? It might drop down to the 12 range because there's other... So over on all of them?
Yeah. I mean, I got to believe that there's at least $15 million worth of Twilights that'll go out and see that movie. I got to believe there's at least $15 million of Tyler Perry, folks.
Because Tyler Perry is generally average between 20 and 23. His weaker ones, I think, are about 18. So 15 might be conservative there.
It might be. So I will take the over on all of them. That's the theaters. New on DVD this week, The Collection. That's the sequel to The Collector, which I don't... Did you see that?
I saw The Collector.
Okay, I didn't see that. Yeah, I remember you not being very high on that. The comedy, which some people were really not high on at all.
Because it's not a comedy.
No. That's Tim and Eric.
Yeah, Tim Heidecker, Eric Wareheim. It's not a Tim and Eric movie per se, but they're stars of it. Yeah.
Killing Them Softly, which was that other Brad Pitt movie that I railed against because it was terrible. Lincoln, Parental Guidance, which we both railed against. A Royal Affair, and the Jurassic Park Blu-ray.
Killing Them Softly, didn't that come out in September?
It came out a while ago.
And now it's 6 months later it's coming out. That's weird. Mm. Where Lincoln was November.
Yeah.
I don't know. Nothing super exciting to me. Killing Them Softly, I saw. Lincoln, I saw.
Yeah.
I don't need to own. Jurassic Park, I'm not a Blu-ray guy, but I do want to watch it again.
Yeah.
And I'd like to discuss it at some point.
So maybe that might be a discussion episode.
Yeah, but it's kind of a slow week.
So you mentioned it's a slow week for, maybe not for the box office, but maybe for movie viewing at home. If someone was going to view something at home, Dave, what should it be?
Go first.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go first. I put mine down, which Dave gets mad when I do that because he's like, "Oh, you stole my movie." I stole a movie off Nicholas Stoller. I said how much I do enjoy his work. Forgetting Sarah Marshall, very, very good. I actually think that maybe his last joint, which was The 5-Year Engagement, I like that quite a bit. I like Emily Blunt quite a bit. I thought it reminded me kind of a Judd Apatow movie, but it wasn't, at no point, no, actually I did at one point think that it was about 20 minutes too long, so it reminded me a lot of a Judd Apatow movie.
It wasn't as good as I wanted it to be.
No, maybe not, but I still thought it was good. It's not like Forgetting Sarah Marshall funny. But I do feel like there's maybe a little bit more into it. I don't know that it quite has the ending that people would expect. So that's kind of the other reason I dug it.
I'm going to go off the Killing Them Softly theme to Andrew Dominik's first movie, Chopper, from 2000.
I think you've done that before.
I did on an episode that never happened.
What?
Yes. It was an episode the week Killing Them Softly came out. I was unable to make it. That episode never ended up airing. So, bam! Chopper. I'm going 6 months in the hole for that one. Starring Eric Bana. It's a little Australian movie from 2000. It's like a crime comedy biography about Mark Chopper Reed. It's really good. And Andrew Dominik, I like him,
Despite Killing Them Softly.
I was okay with it, but he definitely has a type of movie that he does.
Fair enough. Definitely has an agenda in Killing Them Softly, so just be prepared for that. Be prepared for a discussion-heavy episode, a discussion-exclusive episode where we talk a lot of G.I. Joe, and somehow we managed to talk about The Rock in there as well. That'll be available in a couple days. That'll be our second episode of this week. Next week, we've got, in honor of, not Cabin in the Woods, in honor of Evil Dead coming out, which takes place in a cabin in the woods, it'll be your favorite movies, our favorite movies that take place in the woods. I guess there can be horror movies, that can be summer camp movies, which I've already done.
Deliverance takes place in the woods?
Yes.
So, your favorite movies that take place in the woods. Don't tie it down to horror, it can be anything. Just send
what percentage of the movie has to take place in the woods?
A decent amount. Enough that where you think of the movie and you think, oh, that was in the woods.
Okay. Like Bambi.
Yeah.
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 All right. Spoiler alert. Anything else you want to plug, Dave? You've got another podcast,
I'm
right?
on another show called Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. That is still a thing.
Hooray!
It's fate was up in the air last week, so I didn't promote it. But Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave.
That was a work, as your co-host would say.
Yeah, you can find us at ericanddave.com. At Eric and Dave on Twitter or Facebook.com/Eric and Dave. Eric with a K. We're back. We just did a live show a few weeks ago in a new episode.
Which almost killed the podcast.
Yeah. So Ryan was there. He knows why. But yeah, other than that, hit us up, me and Ryan up, moviesonup.com, Facebook.com/moviesonup. Go like our page. Share it with your friends. If you have friends that like movies, point them to us.
Or if you don't, tell them we're about something else.
Twitter at moviesonup.
Leave us an iTunes review.
Leave us an iTunes review. And go to moviesonup.com, which we got an email from Russell this week, who, I don't know if you noticed, I did not swear this week. I said asses and piss, I think.
Yeah.
But
I think piss is okay.
I've been trying not to swear. Yeah. Russell called me out on it, said we swear too much, so I was a little more cautious about it. And he said that our website is terrible. So I'm looking at the website. We are going to try to get some blog posts going. If you want to maybe write blog posts for us, let us know. I don't think it needs to be just me and Ryan.
No, I think it'd be better if it was not just you and I.
We don't have the best track record so far, but hit us up. Let us know. Watch the Wolverine and the White House Down trailers. Let us know. We'll go through those next week. And listen to us later this week as we talk about G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra. That should be fun.
Yeah.
And we hope you enjoy the two-episode format. If you don't, or if you do, let us know.
If you don't, just download one of them. It's
fine. We're always trying to tweak them. So
yeah.
Just let us know. And until then,
keep it up.